අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස.
Good morning everyone. Today we shall be continuing from the place we stopped last time. Still we are in the list of paramattha dhammas. So far we have discussed briefly what are the paramattas in the Theravada tradition, discussed in the Theravada tradition. And then we exclusively explained about the paramattha dhammas, which are the conditioned realities advocated in the within the tradition. Then we gave a list of these realities, which are the group of chittas, chetasikas and rupas. So far we have discussed how the chitta and chetasika are related to each other. For instance, the chetasikas can be classified into three groups, like the akusala group, the beautiful group, sobana group, we call beautiful chetasikas, and then ethically variable ones, the miscellaneous ones. Then based on these chetasikas, the chittas were also categorized into the chetas that are connected with akusala chetasikas, unwholesome mental states, are called unwholesome chittas. Then the chittas which are connected with beautiful mental states were called beautiful chitta, the sobhana chittas. And then there were a group of chittas, as we discussed last week, which are only connected with the ethically variable group, the 30. And also be reminded, the akusala chittas do have the ethically variable group and also the akusala group in terms of chetasikas. Then also in the sobhana chittas, the sobhana chetasikas, the beautiful mental factors, and also the ethically variable ones are found. The ethically variable ones, which we call anya samana in Pali, can be found in all the chittas, whatever group it is, whatever group it belongs to, the ethically variables are found. And also within the ethically variables, we didn't much emphasize on this fact, there are seven chetasikas which are called universals, means they are found in all the chittas, within all the chittas, like all the chittas associate these universal chetasikas, which are called passa, vedana, sanya, chetana, ekaggata, jivitindriya and manasikara. Today I was planning to give a brief overlook about the chittas, because there is, I think, in the handout that I have distributed few weeks ago, you can see a list of chittas. If you count them, the number would be 89. The number would stand as 89. So, what are these 89 chittas? So, just to give a brief explanation, what are them? If possible, if you can remember the names, it will be really, really useful to study the Buddhist teachings in the Theravada tradition. So normally in our traditional studies, we try to remember the names of these chittas and also the chetasikas and the rupas, and how the mixture of chitta chetasikas happen. Which chitta? How many chetasikas the first chitta has? How many chetasikas the second chitta? So likewise, we try to remember their names and also how they are practically mixed according to the doctrine. Like if someone has a doubt, is it necessary? Keep in mind, like when we want to study chemistry, the periodical table that is something that we have to memorize in order, because to find out to what are the characteristics of certain elements, we have to memorize it in its order. So then it is very easy for us to categorize the elements based on like alkalines and all this, based on the noble gases, based on their electrons and so forth. So likewise, the categorization of chittas were done based on certain criteria. Therefore, when we try to remember them in order, that would facilitate easiness in studies, and we'll be able to grab certain philosophical points quite easily based on our memorization. So it's highly recommended that you memorize these chittas. It may take some time because it's a foreign language for most of you. For the Sri Lankans, like, it will be quite easier because Pali and Sinhalese are very close to each other. Actually, Sinhalese is greatly influenced by Pali and Sanskrit. So if someone can remember, memorize these terms, because if I just give a hint on this, now, like, if you go into the page number one, the 12 Akusala Chittas, the third group, third subtopic, 8 Lobmula Chittas, what we have to keep in mind is just remember, memorize three words, like Somanasa Sahagata is a one word, like one phrase. Dittigata Sampayutta, Dittigata is one word, Sampayutta, Asankarika. So what changes is, sometimes the Somanasa Sahagata become Upekka Sahagata. Dittigata Sampayutta is connected, becomes Vipayutta. Dittigata Sampayutta and Dittigata Vipayutta, these are the two terms. Asankarika becomes Sasankarika. You just add S into the beginning. Asankarika and Sasankarika. So then these three terms, like Somanasa Upekha, Sampayutta, Dittigata Sampayutta, Vipayutta, Asankarika, Sasankarika. So then we can mix the terms. So sometimes we can have Somanasa Sahagata, Dittigata Sampayutta, Asankarika, Dittigata Sampayutta, Sasankarika. Somanasa Sahagata, Dittigata Sampayutta, Sasankarika. Then we can change Somanasahagata Dittigata Vipayutta Asankarika. Then Somanasahagata Dittigata Vipayutta Sasankarika. So it's just there is a rhythm in there. So it's quite easier if we can keep in mind the few words, then it won't be a problem. So if you can remember the first 8 Lomula Chittas, then we go into the Kusala Chittas, Vipaka Chittas, Kiriya Chittas. It's quite easy to keep in mind because they have the same formula. Instead of Dittigata Sampayutta, they become Jnana Sampayutta. So likewise, if you can remember few chittas, it is also obvious that most of the chittas will be easy to put into the memory, bring into the memory. So therefore, I highly recommend that if you are interested in studying the Theravada teachings further into its deep aspects, it's very highly recommended that you memorize these chittas and also the chetasikas. Chetasikas may have sometimes, because they are completed two different, 52 different realities, which doesn't have any rhythm or any algorithm in them. When we keep on studying, we will keep on reciting, or we keep on observing them, reading them, they will stick into our minds, right? So therefore, that's also some encouragement that I would like to give. Now we'll move on to the chittas again. Because so far we have discussed the chittas based on the chetasikas. We explained the chetasikas, each and every chetasika we discussed last time. Then the chittas which are connected with chetasikas. Now I'm going to give an overall idea about what are these chittas. What are these chittas? So if you go into the page number one, we can see chitta. There are three types of First line is that there are three types of Sankata Paramatta Dhammas mentioned within the tradition. 89 or 121 chittas. 121 will be classified later. Then 52 chetasikas and 18 rupa. 18 rupa, we exclude the Anippanna rupas, which are not concretely produced. So it becomes 18 instead of 28. Then we come into chitta. So the topic of chitta. Chitta is fourfold based on the sphere or the bhumi. We can call it the land, bhumi, but here it's better to call the sphere, because land is a physical thing. So bhumi here doesn't always refer to the land upon which we stand or upon which we live. This is a certain kind of a sphere sometimes, which cannot be specifically locate, like specifically mentioned in terms of locally. It is not possible to specify locally, like in terms of location. The topic of sphere is something broader. So just keep in mind, there are four types of spheres based on the definition has been based on craving. Definition is based on craving. So roughly we can understand the karma sphere is the divine world and the human world and the woeful realms. This is the karma sphere. Then we call it the sensual sphere, the sensual realm. Then we come into another sphere called Rupa realm, which is attained by attaining jhana, higher concentration. Then there is another realm called Arupa realm, immaterial realm, which is also a state attained with jhana, but there is no form. It's a formless state. It's a completely a different realm, we call. Then we have the Lokuttaras. Lokuttaras are not the lives. They are just states that we should attain. That is the final attainment or goal of Buddhist teachings. So based on these spheres, the citta is fourfold as 54 kamavachara, 15 rupavachara, 12 arupavachara and 8 lokuttara. I think we have discussed this chart few times so far already. So the citta consciousness is divided into four groups. Kamavachara, like consciousness of the sensual realm. These are 54 in number. Consciousness belonging to the sensual realm. Then we have Rupavachara. Consciousness belonging to the fine material realm, we call. Of the fine material realm. Because fine material means they do possess certain matter, material, but it is quite subtle than what we have in the karma realm. Karma realm means there is sensual pleasure in this realm. In the rupa realms, so after this karma realm, the person has already overcome the sensual desires. One who attains the rupavachara realm has overcome the sensual desire, so that's why he is born there. So there are 15 chittas that belong to this realm. Belonging to a realm doesn't mean that chitta only arises over there. Belonging to a realm has a different explanation on it. A chitta which is the object of the craving related to this realm, a chitta which is the object of the craving related to the realm, is classified as consciousness of the fine material realm. So in case to have a rough idea, just keep in mind these chittas appear most in those realms, but it doesn't mean that these chittas cannot arise in the sensual realm. So even in the sensual chitta, the chittas that arise in the sensual realm can arise in other realms as well. So the classification is not based on the place where the chitta arises. The original classification is made on the craving which can take these chittas as objects. So that is the accepted criterion to decide to which realm the chittas are located. There are some explanations based on the place where they arise, but they still have some complications. So therefore, just keep in mind the chittas are classified into these groups not because of the place they arise. So these chittas can arise in other realms as well. For instance, we have four types of realms. The Arupa realm. Arupa realm is the highest realm, we'll call. There is no form in it. There is a different types of species living there, which are formless, because they attain such state having given up the attachment to the rupa, having suppressed the attachment to the rupa. Then we have Rupa realm, which is also a Brahma state, but lower to this realm, because they do possess a rupa, they do possess some material stuff. Arupa realm, do not have material self, they only have the chitta. Then we have karma realm. Karma realm is the realm or the world that we live in. Humans, deities, and also the woeful beings like animals, hell beings, the ghosts, they all belong into this realm. So we are all together 11 worlds belong to this realm. There are 11 karma realms, 16 rupa realms. There are 16 worlds pertaining to this realm. Then 4 arupa realms, and there is another sphere we call Lokuttara, which is not a life, which are states, like the Nirvana is the Lokuttara Bhumi. And then the chittas which are related to this Bhumi are called Lokuttara chittas. The classification is any consciousness which is an object of the craving towards this realm, the craving that leads to be born in this realm. If a chitta is an object of attached by such a craving, that chitta is classified as kamavachara. If any chitta is being attached by the craving that leads to these realms, then that chitta is considered as rupavachara. If a chitta is attached by the craving which leads to this realm, then that chitta is considered as arupavachara. If a chitta is not attached by any craving, by any means, such chittas are called Lokuttara. Better to call them apariyapanna. Another synonym for them is apariyapanna. Apariyapanna are the chittas that are not craved by any sort of craving. So then we have arupavachara. Arupavachara. Consciousness of the immaterial, then we have 12, then Lokuttara. I prefer to use the word apariyapanna actually. Pay not than any. Apariyapanna. There are 8. The chittas which are not craved by chittas. Consciousness, which is not attached by any sort of craving. There are 8 in number, right? Consciousness. So all these up to here, draw a line. These chittas, we normally call them mundane. Like Lokiya is the Pali word for that, Lokiya. There are 81 if we count it. 54, 15 and 12 is 81. And these we call the supramundane. We can call supramundane. Supra mundane, which has gone beyond the mundane sphere, or we can call them Lokuttara, like Lokuttara. So these are the these chittas. Among these chittas, these 54, now though we call all of them, now the word mundane normally refers to some secular things which are not very advanced. But in the Buddhist aspect, the Theravada aspect, how we translate these words, though the normal humans, normal beings who are lacking spirituality, normally possess only these 54 chittas. These chittas are higher attainments in terms of spiritual aspect. Like highly concentrated chittas are there. They are highly concentrated chittas. They have only through gradual training of the mind, culturing of the mind, we are able to attain these chittas. So therefore, the normal folks of the world would possess these chittas, these 54, they are attained with higher spiritual attainments, normally, higher spiritual attainments. But still, we call them mundane Because compared to these chittas, compared to these eight, that would cut off the defilements that are completely beyond the defilements, which are not the objects of defilements. So still we call all of them, even they are attained with spiritual development, still we call them mundane. So this word mundane doesn't insist that these are lower chittas. They are lower compared to these eight. That is true. But compared to these chittas, these 54, the ordinary chittas that we possess, they are highly developed, spiritually advanced chittas are there. So therefore, we have to keep in mind, we may call them mundane, because one thing is, these spiritual attainments, still one can get attached to such high achievements that we made in spirituality. A highly high concentration, well-focusedness on a certain object, and it brings lots of bliss to us, it brings a lot of comfort to us, it takes our mind away from the defilement, the burning defilement. So normally a person who has attained these states, these chittas, would normally get attached to such blissful experiences. So therefore, they are still object of certain type of a craving. That craving which attached to these chittas are not the ordinary craving or the lust that we experience in day-to-day life. There is a subtle kind of a craving towards it. But these chittas are completely beyond the scope of craving. Beyond the scope of craving. So they are never an object of attachment or of tanha. So therefore, we can consider them as supramundane, completely beyond the mundane realm. So keep it in mind, normally the chittas that should be called mundane are these chittas, these ordinary chittas. Then these chittas are spiritual attainments in terms of the worldly level, but still, as they are objects of craving, we still categorize them as mundane chittas. Right? Mundane chittas. So this is the chart of the 89 chittas, and then we try to analyze one by one. If you go to the handout, page number 1, we see the second subtopic. 54 kamavachara chittas are threefold as following. They are again threefold. I'm not going to write it in the board because then it will be really complicated. So we have 12 akusala chittas, 18 ahetuka, and 24 kama sobana. So these 54 is threefold again. These 15 are also threefold again. This 12 is again threefold. 8 is twofold. So this is the basic categorization. 54 non-ordinary chittas are threefold, and these 15, 12 are also again threefold. 8 chittas are normally twofold, right? They are twofold. If I draw them here, 54 chittas are threefold. These chittas are also threefold. Here is twofold. Normal categorization. If we use a different color, it will be better. We use black color. So I'll just write these three classifications because they would have further classifications. So we can say 12 akusala chittas. Akusala is unwholesome. Then we have ahetuka, rootless. They don't have any roots. Then kama sobana. 24. This is how the number 54 is made. I think you can see it in the handout. So we'll first go into the 12 akusala chittas. Unwholesome consciousness. So I haven't given the translation actually, just to make the handout brief. Because if I give the translation to each and every term, this handout would get double, right? The size would get double. So, and also I want most of the listeners to get used to the Pali words. So, 12 akusala chittas, the unwholesome chittas, then they are again threefold. as Lobha Mula, Dosa Mula, and Moha Mula. They are again threefold, the 12 Akusala Chittas. You can see these in a handout. First, they are classified into eight Lobha Mulas. Eight Lobha Mulas. Then if you go to page number 2, we find two Dosa Mulas. Two Dosa Mula. Dosa is hatred or the anger. Then two Moha Mulas. Delusion. Rooted in delusion. Rooted in anger. And the first page, rooted in craving. So then, eight Chittas rooted in craving. Two Chittas rooted in anger. Two Chittas rooted in delusion. So this is how the classification is. So these are 12 Akusa, out of them, the eight Lobha Mula Chittas. Eight Lobha Mula Chittas means consciousness rooted in greed. Consciousness based on greed. Consciousness which has greed as the prominent factor, which is motivated by greed. Whatever it is, we can call. They are Lobha Mula Chittas. Eight Lobha Mula Chittas. So when we do certain acts like enjoying sensual pleasures, enjoying the gratifying the five senses, and trying to satisfy ourselves, trying to build up a career in the life, like with some motivation, and trying to enjoy our life, loving our beloved ones, like children, the family member, the husbands, wives, parents, all these occasions, the chitta that normally arises in us is these eight Lobha Mula Chittas. Eight Lobha Mula Chittas delight in certain objects. Sometimes in the spiritual aspect also, we have a delight in doing good things. But there is a slight difference in it. Sometimes we may get attached or we may like certain objects because of the benefits they give us, like to associate a good teacher, like to live in a good place that is conducive to our practice, and also to read certain books that inspire us. So there is a liking on it, but this liking is mainly motivated by seeing the benefits that they give us. And those benefits are also for our spiritual development, like to develop our good virtuous qualities. At the same time, we may get attached to some person or something, and we may start to love it or to like it. So the difference can be seen. Now, sometimes it will be a little bit difficult to distinguish what sort of a liking we have. We have a liking towards something which is beneficial to us in terms of the wholesomeness, and sometimes we may have some liking towards a certain object or a person because we like it, because we like to associate it, because it gives us some pleasure talking with him or talking with that person or seeing it, looking at it. Sometimes we may get certain pleasures on it. So how do we distinguish it? Now, it becomes obvious, is one aspect of distinguishing. It becomes obvious when we get separated from that object. When we are separated from that object, the feeling that we get is quite different. It's quite different. The feeling, the sorrow, the unhappiness that we have by seeing or getting separated from a beloved one and getting separated from something which is beneficial to our lives, we have two different types of sorrows. I think all of us have experienced that. The sorrow, losing something which is beneficial to our practice or to our spiritual or to our wholesomeness, to our good life, and also losing something that we really attach, is two different things. We may not cry normally, like when something beneficial to what is lost. It can come into that level to some people, I admit that. But the feeling is quite different. But when we lose someone that we love, the suffering is immense and it torments our mind differently from a separation from something which is supportive to our practice. So it shows that the lobha, the attachment, liking based on lobha, it doesn't like a separation from the beloved object. It doesn't like the separation or getting apart from that specific object that we attach to. So that is the difference between liking in the wholesome side and also liking in the unwholesome side. So here we are talking about a liking in the lobha mula cittas, in the handout. We are talking about a liking that of that sort, like which doesn't like the object to get, doesn't like to get apart from the object. So these cittas, and also they arise while in the unwholesome side, like performing the adultery, the sexual misconduct is specifically done with these cittas. Then sometimes getting attached to, starting to like the objects that others possess, and also it is mentioned all the wrong views are held with these cittas. Basically, because the wrong view is, most of the cases, almost all the cases, is based on the self, the idea of self. The idea of self is based on the craving towards our lives. So therefore, there are certain unwholesome deeds that we do with these through these cittas. And these are the cittas normally that arise most in our day-to-day life. Mostly in the sensual realm, in the human realm, in the deva realm, these cittas are the abundant. They arise very frequently in us, right? So there are 8 cittas. Sometimes they are connected with somanasa feeling, that is the pleasant, happy feeling. Then sometimes the neutral feeling, upekka sahagata. Dittigata sampayutta means sometimes they are connected with wrong view. Sometimes disconnected with wrong view. It doesn't have any wrong view. Then asankarika sasankarika means prompted and unprompted. It means sometimes we may do certain acts with eagerly. Our mind doesn't get retarded. We just eagerly do certain acts. Specifically, the example is given. Someone is going to rob something, like doing a robbery or going to adultery. Some may just feel like it's not something worthy for us, and he may consider various other facts and keep a step behind and think like whether I do it or not. Or sometimes his mind get retarded to do that certain act. So then later on, because of encouragement by others or by your own self, the person may get energized, the mind get energized and start to do that unwholesome deed. So in such cases, we call it prompted. Prompted means it has been, the mind has gone down, it has retarded in that, and it was energized or brought back the zeal was brought back, the energy was brought back, intention was brought back. So in such cases, we call it's a prompted mind. In other cases, in other occasions, the person may, without any retarding or without any drawing back, he may just eagerly do the act without any hesitation, without considering any eagerly he may do. Sometimes some may have encouraged him to do, but there is no mind is not stepping backwards. So there are, in such cases, we call it asankarika. Asankarika is unprompted. It's originally the mind was sharp and got involved in the act directly. Sasankarika means it steps back, it retards, and then get energized and do that. So in such cases, the results would, there is an effect on the vipaka. If we retard the act and do it, in such cases, we say the results are a little bit different from the acts that were done eagerly without any retarding. So likewise, and dittigata sampayutta and vipayutta, sometimes that now someone can enjoy the food according to the Buddhist teaching. Someone can enjoy the food or do so by thinking that this was given by ultimate God and so forth. In such cases, in Buddhism, we categorize it as a wrong view. And someone may do wrong deeds like stealing and so forth, thinking, having a wrong view. Like if someone considers that stealing from the wealthy and giving it to the poor, there is no harm in it, there is no akusala in it. So this is a wrong view. This is a wrong view. It's a wrong consideration. According to the Buddhist teachings, whether the person, the one who is being looted, his wealth or his status doesn't matter, as long as we take the things that doesn't belong to us by force. So likewise, if someone has this certain acts with such wrong ideologies, wrong views, then we call it's a dittigata sampayutta chitta. Then somanasa sahagata and upekka sahagata, sometimes we do the acts happily. In some occasions, our mind is not that much excited in our unwholesome deed. Like, for instance, someone may enjoy watching a movie or watching the television, and there are occasions that we just keep on watching it, watching the television, but our mind is not that much entertained, but still we keep on watching. Like we cannot give it up because there is a habitual liking towards it, but there is no such much enjoyment. So in such cases, keep in mind that the chitta is, the lobha is still there. That's why we cannot give it up. That's why we just sometimes we just waste our time, maybe in social media or maybe in watching something, but there is no much enjoyment. So the lobha mula chitta is present with the upekkha feeling, neutral feeling. So when we analyze these chitta in our day-to-day life, we find these chittas are very prominent in our lives. Sometimes we may give food to animal. There are two ways that we can give the food. Like, we can give it as a donation to the animal to support its life. And also sometimes we may give food to enjoy seeing how they eat. In such occasions, giving is a wholesome act. Normally when we give something, that's a wholesome deed. But when we enjoy seeing them eating, like someone can enjoy in a wholesome manner, like being happy that it enjoys it. But sometimes we do it for like fun, like going for safari and so forth. In such occasions, the chitta is lobha mula. Chitta is lobha mula. We adorn ourselves to be beautiful, to be attractive. This act can also be done with the both wholesome and unwholesome mindset. If we wear some clothes to cover our body, to be appropriate according to the occasion, to fit to our status, social status. So that is, in such acts, the wearing has been done with wisdom, with a wholesome mindset. But if we wear certain things to get attracted, like to show off or to be obvious than others, to show ourselves, to come into, to show that we are more wealthier than the others. If we wear clothes or ornaments with such an attitude, we normally consider the act was done with lobha mula chittas. And also in eating, we can eat the food to appease our hunger. At the same time, just to enjoy the taste of the food. In those occasions, both occasions, one was done, the prior was done with the kusala chittas, the latter is done with the akusala chittas, the lobha mula chittas. So therefore, lobha mula chittas, normally we look into the mirror and try to admire ourselves, how beautiful we look and how our figure is. Sometimes we may end up with dosa chitta, like seeing that there's some features of our face is not attractive, and sometimes we may try to admire that I look beautiful and so forth. So on such occasions, please keep in mind the chitta is lobha mula. Chitta is lobha mula. And then how can we do it, such an act, with a wholesome mindset? Then we look into the mirror to see whether there is any inappropriateness, like if some mark is left in our body, left in our face, or some dirt in our eyes, to remove it, to be proper to the occasion, to go into the society. With such intentions, we look into the mirror. That can be done with a wholesome mindset. The attitude is what matters here. The same act can be done with the wholesome mindset. That same act can be done with the unwholesome lobha mula chitta. So, and also keep in mind, such act, the minor acts, the trifle acts that we do in day-to-day lives, are not going to take us to woeful realms, or not going to give us a rebirth in woeful realms, but still we consider them as akusala because they were done with the wrong, like a attached attitude. So they are not considered as wholesome. At the same time, keep in mind, they are not going to bring much harm like the unwholesome deeds that people do, like stealing, killing and so forth. So these are the 8 lobha mula chittas. Then we go into the second page, the 2 dosa mula chittas. So dosa mula chittas are 2, domanasa sahagata patiga sampayutta asankarika, domanasa sahagata patiga sampayutta asankarika. So this patiga, domanasa, is like disliking the object, not liking the object, going against the object. If now these dosa mula chittas also appears regularly in our lives when things are not going well. When things are not going well. Like, for instance, one aspect of dosa is fear. Fear. Like, if we fear to the society, or like about the ghost or non-humans, that would haunt us. Or sometimes we are fearful about our futures. We have doubts about our job security, or we may fear the certain diseases. So likewise, the fear is a one aspect of dosa. And then when things are not going well, then when, for instance, when the children are making a mess in our house, like they do not listen to us, or our partners do not act as we wish, or things like we sometimes forget where we kept a very important thing. So in such occasions, we get disappointed. Sometimes we get frustrated. In such occasions, the citta which arises are these, one of these two dosa mula cittas. So according to the Theravada tradition, if we have a disliking, that is a manifestation of dosa mula cittas. There is a wholesome dislike. For instance, you observe the repulsiveness of the body and get detached from the body. So this kind of disliking, or not appreciating or seeing the true nature of the body, are not considered as domanasa. It is done with a wholesome mind. It's done with a wholesome mind. So therefore, this done with domanasa also can be done with the wholesome mindset. So what matters is the attitude. What matters is the attitude. Then there are certain unwholesome deeds that we do only with the dosa mula cittas, like killing, harsh words, like telling things that hurts others, speaking out words that would spear into their hearts, or to make them feel uncomfortable. If we do it with the intention to harm others, so that act is done surely with the dosa mula citta. And sometimes even stealing and all these can be done with dosa mula cittas. To like someone can steal other stuff to bring down their success, or to harm them. So in such occasions, those acts are motivated by the dosa mula cittas. But keep in mind, the killing, even we do it as gaming, like for a sport, go for gaming, like killing animals for fun. Even on such occasions, the bullet is shot with the dosa mula citta. The arrow is shot with the dosa mula citta. So the final execution of the killing has to be done with the dosa mula citta. That is how the Theravada tradition explains. And these dosa mula, now sometimes when things are not going perfect in our lives, if someone says something improper in a certain occasion, we may feel like we give a sound like chuk and say it's, we doesn't feel much happy about the occasion. So keep in mind, in even such occasions, the citta is a dosa mula citta. So dosa mula citta also arises subtly in our mind. Now especially this happens while driving in certain countries where the rules are not fully followed by others. So if someone makes a mistake while driving, suddenly the frustration or the anger comes up. So on that occasion, we have to keep in mind the dosa mula citta has occurred, which is quite harmful to ourselves. It is not very harmful like doing a misdeed like killing and so forth, but still it takes out of peace. So, and also sometimes we feel boredom, especially involved in wholesome acts, spiritual acts, in meditation and so forth. Sometimes we feel like laziness or boredom, like we are not enjoying that act. Sometimes staying in the house, nothing much to be done, like especially when people are in the quarantine or in house, were confined to the houses because of the pandemic. Sometimes we got frustrated. We wanted to do some work, but we are unable to go out, so we feel like we are stuck there. So on such occasions, that frustration, discomfort, all these feelings are the arising of these dosa mula cittas. They are connected with these dosa mula cittas. And also sometimes when we feel sad, sadness is ultimately the vedana chetasika in dosa mula citta. So but normally this dosa mula citta arises sometimes when we feel regret about the things that we have done, the jealousy, the stinginess, that not liking others to have a similar success that we as we have, in such occasions, all occasions, dosa mula citta is what is arising. And also so we can see how prominent these cittas are also in our lives, like the lobha mula citta. Especially these cittas arise in most of the countries, I feel, in during election times, like seeing the opponent, the person that we don't like speaking in public or saying, criticizing the candidate that we support, we normally get this frustration, or we start to observe all the bad deeds that the person has done. So this is obviously a dosa mula citta. So therefore, if we want to have a spiritually enhance ourselves, these in present day-to-day life, we have to be aware of this arising of dosa mula cittas. And it also arises observing the real faults of others. Sometimes people make mistakes, that's true. They are actually faults that should be criticized. But the criticism can be done with a wholesome mindset as well. Like we see the real fault of others, we also do have faults, we see our faults. So when we observe our faults, we start to feel regret. That is also an act of dosa. Then seeing others, we start to accuse or criticize. That is also an act of dosa, normally. But how do we do it with the wholesome mindset? We see our faults and we determine that not to do it again or to correct ourselves. So Buddha mentions in one sutta that he knows that the disciple that comes to him have done unwholesome deeds before they encounter Buddhism. That's obvious. So he knows this phenomena. And he says, now after you have become a good person or come into this Dhamma, you can correct yourselves and go move forward. Even being a Buddhist, sometimes we do make mistakes. But when we find that we feel the regret that I have done something wrong, and what regret is good in that sense, that we recognize that our fault, but we should not be lagging or spending our time or being in that fault or regretting that. We should not spend our time or stuck in that regret feeling. We have to move forward having given it up, because it's not, even though we regret, that the act is not going to be rectified. That's the act. Then we observe someone else's faults. At that time, there are many ways that we can consider. We can see how the defilements are acting on others. If we start to see the defilements of that person, rather than a person is doing that act, because he's motivated by the defilements, and we get to know that even I myself, if the defilements arises in myself, I may also act in such a manner, then our mind is not affected by the dosa as it happens in the normal circumstances. Then we may also talk to that person if there is a possibility, but with a peaceful, calm mind, and just to have a discussion and to correct him. And we can also have a compassion towards that person, because by doing that act, maybe it's harming myself or him, harming the society, he's unknowingly, he's causing harm to himself in terms of karma and vipaka. So likewise, when we start to think on such aspects, we can face the situation, the same situation, with a wholesome mindset. So that is also something we have to keep in mind. And then I move to the next cittas, the moha mula cittas, cittas associated with doubt and cittas associated with restlessness. This doubt is specifically, we are talking about the doubting the actual profound phenomena. Doubting the actual profound phenomena, like the rebirth, is there a rebirth or not? Is it possible to become Buddha or not? Is there a nirvana or not? Is this practice is valid or not? Is there benefit of following this sila samadhi panya? Such doubts are called vichikicchahi. Such doubts are called vichikicchahi. Then we have uddaccha sampayutta citta, which is called the mind consciousness associated with restlessness. Normally this citta happens when we are supposed to do various acts at the same time. Sometimes because of our negligence, the workload gets accumulated, and we are supposed to do things in a shorter time, but then we have lots of responsibilities to do. Then at that time we feel like our mind gets restless. We don't know what to do in some occasion. On such occasions, this Uddaccha Sampayutta Citta arises. It's quite a weak citta. Anyway, so these are the 12 cittas. 8 are rooted in greed, two are rooted in hatred or anger, and two are rooted with moha. Then we move on to, because we have few more minutes, we move on to the next group of chittas, the 18 ahetuka chittas. Ahetuka. Ahetuka means rootless. Rootless. So what are the three roots? Lobha, dosa, moha in the akusala side. Then we also have alobha, adosa, and amoha. Adosa, alobha, adosa, and amoha. So these are the six roots. These are the wholesome side and the wholesome side and unwholesome side. So these chittas which we are talking doesn't have any roots, any of these roots. So the cognition ability of these chittas are quite low. So that's why we call them ahetuka chittas. They are the weakest chittas among these 89. So what are them? If you look into the chart, we can see 7 akusala vipaka. Akusala vipaka doesn't mean they are akusala. They are produced by akusala. They are the resultant of akusala. They are not the akusala. If you call them the akusala chittas, fundamentally is a wrong usage. Akusala vipaka, the resultants of the akusala. Kusala vipaka, the resultants of the wholesome deeds. So we can see upekka sahagata chakku vinyana, the eye consciousness associated with neutral feeling. Sota vinyana, ghana vinyana, jivha vinyana. When it comes to the kaya vinyana, it associates the dukkha feeling. Then we have two more chitta, sampatichana santirna. Chakku vinyana means the eye consciousness. What does it mean by eye consciousness? The act consciousness that arises on the eye, which facilitates this seeing. So how do we explain seeing? So when we close our eyes and suddenly open, and when we close again, we know there was a short occasion when the eyes were open. All the objects in front of us, all the colors in front of us became obvious to us. We could see them. We could observe them. They became sensitive to us. This act of seeing the colors which are in front of us is the chakku vijnana, is the eye consciousness. It's a certain act which happens on the eye. So then sota vijnana means the ear consciousness, the consciousness which arises on the ear, getting sensitive, being sensitive to the sounds of the surrounding environment, So this act of being sensitive to this sound itself is called the sota vijnana. The gana vijnana, the act of smelling, the sensation we get while we smell something, the odors. Jiva vijnana, when the tongue consciousness, when the food is being chewed or put into our mouth, we feel some taste. That the consciousness which feels the taste is called jiva vijnana. Kaya vijnana, the body consciousness, the consciousness which arises on the body, being sensitive to the touch. Maybe that touch is harsh or comfortable, whatever the sensation that we get while something touches our body is called kaya vijnana. Sampaticchana and santirana, consciousness arises in a process. Like when the eye's consciousness sees something, immediately that object is taken by another chitta in the heart base. Like eye consciousness arises in the eye, and that chitta is retaken on the heart. In the heart means by another chitta, that is called sampatichana chitta. We normally call it the receiving consciousness. You can write down. The receiving consciousness. What does it receive? The object that was seen by the eye consciousness. The object that was heard by the ear consciousness. The object that was smelled by the nose consciousness, the object that was felt by the tongue consciousness, the object that was felt by the body consciousness. Whatever the channel it is, after the main consciousness takes this object, knows this object, cognizes this object, that specific object is retaken or received by another chitta. That chitta is called sampatichana. Then santirana, that object which has been taken by the sampatichana chitta, received by the sampatichana chitta, is further investigated by another chitta called santirana. Santirana means investigating consciousness. investigating consciousness. This happens in a very rapid speed. This investigation should not be misunderstood like we see two things on the one thing on the ground, we start to investigate what it is to find out to whom it belongs to, or is this something valuable, or is this something dangerous, or like harmful to anyone. So this investigation is done by various types of mind processes. Here what we are talking, within the like in a snap of a time, when the conscious, eye consciousness, ear consciousness, body consciousness, all these five take a certain object at a time, that object is received, retaken by the sampatichana citta. That object is investigated in one mind moment by another citta, which is called santirana, which is called sanchitana. So all these happen with the sometimes they happen as a result of unwholesome acts. How do we understand that these are the results of unwholesome acts? Such things would be clarified when we go ahead with the lessons. Then kusala vipakas also have the same types of chittas. The difference is there is eye consciousness, ear consciousness, body consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, then the body consciousness, instead of getting dukkha in the akusala group, here we have sukha, the pleasant one. So it's a plus comfortable bodily feeling. Then sampatichana is the receiving consciousness, as it was explained before. Then santirana citta is twofold, as somanassa and upekkha. Somanassa and upekkha, because if the object is very pleasant, very attractive, the investigating consciousness becomes somanassa. If the object is attractive or pleasant, but not in a very high intense level, then it becomes upekkha sahagata. So how do we categorize? Now there are two types of consciousness. Chakku vinyana in the kusala vipaka and chakku vinyana in the akusala vipaka. So the explanation of the Theravadians is, if the object is pleasant, the chakku vinyana, eye consciousness, is considered as a resultant of the wholesome act. It's a kusala vipaka eye consciousness. If the object is pleasant, if the object is, the sound is sweet, it's a kusala vipaka sota vinyana. If the object that we see is unpleasant, then the consciousness which arises is considered as akusala vipaka chakku vinyana. If the sound is harsh or not sweet, not adorable to our ear, comfortable for our ear, then we consider it as a akusala vipaka sota vinyana. The consciousness which knows that object is the akusala vipaka. It's same criterion should be applied into smelling or tasting and feeling something. So according to this, what the Buddhism is telling, the Theravadins are saying, is that there is an aesthetic value of the object itself. Normally the aesthetic value, the beauty of an object, it greatly depends on our own perspective, on how we perceive it, based on how we see the world, with some things that are considered as good by someone may be considered as bad by some other one. So this is a subjective aesthetic appreciation. But according to Buddhism, subjective aesthetic appreciation is also found within Buddhism. That is obvious because we can see it in day-to-day lives. But there is also a objective aesthetic beauty, which is inbuilt in the object. So both the aspects should be applied when we consider about the world, the art, in Buddhist aspect. So like David Hume, a Western philosopher, also suggested that we cannot say that all the appreciations that we make are only subjective, because the objects themselves also have some kind of aesthetic value, or a pleasantness or unpleasantness, or the beauty or the ugliness can be found within the object. That's why when certain objects are really unpleasant to the majority of the people, even while the child has not, his thinking ability has not grown into higher levels, they adverse certain objects. That is normally obvious. So it means that certain objects do possess certain inbuilt unpleasantness and inbuilt pleasantness, right? So that's how, if the object is pleasant, chakku vinyana and so forth, all these seven are considered akusala vipaka. If the object is unpleasant, kusala vipaka. If the object is unpleasant, it is considered as akusala vipaka. So how do we think whether the chakku vinyana, sota vinyana, which arose in us, whether it's a kusala vipaka or akusala vipaka? Based on the object. Based on the object. Then another thing to keep in mind, now these chittas happen in the beginning level of our cognitive process. Like when we start to see something, the initial chittas are this chakku vinyana, sampatittana and santirana. Later on, we may have a different appreciation or unliking towards that object. That is basically, mostly it can be subject based on our subjective experience. So at a certain level of the cognition, the process of cognition, we bring our own attitudes to evaluate a certain object, so we can judge whether I like it or dislike it. But here we are talking about the very basic level of cognition. When the initial cognition has started, it has been initiated. At that level, our attitudes do not play a role. The object is more prominent at that level. So it's like the mind process works. It's like if we draw the strength, it goes like this. So at this kind of a level, the object is evaluated mainly, not always, mainly based on our subjective attitude. But at the beginning level of the cognition, when we come into the mind processes, this will be much clearer. At this level, normally the object is, the pleasantness and unpleasantness of the object is based on the nature of the object itself. Because the thing is, the cognitive ability is quite low here. When the cognitive ability comes into a higher level, those chittas are influenced by our attitudes, the how we look into the world, our the cultures and so forth. Then we come into three other kriya chittas in the page number 3. Upekkha sahagata panchadwara vajjana. That is, we call 5 door adverting consciousness. That's how we translate it. 5 door adverting consciousness. 5 door adverting consciousness. Then manodwara vajjana chitta. Upekkha sahagata manodwara vajjana. It is called mind door adverting consciousness. Then somanasa sahagata hasituppada. That is smile producing consciousness. The last one is exclusive to arahants. They can smile with 5 types of chitta. One of them is the hasituppada. Then the 2 adverting is when an object strikes at one of our 5 sense doors, our mind is first adverted or directed towards that object. That is called panchadwara vajjana. So when an object strikes at our eye, our mind was in a different state. Initially, the mind has to take this object. It means mind is directed towards the newly arrived object. So normally, this 5 door adverting consciousness should arise before the 5 consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear, tongue, nose, and body consciousness. Before this consciousness, what arises is this 5 door adverting consciousness. The 5 door adverting consciousness directs our minds toward that particular object. Then the eye consciousness arise, then the receiving consciousness arise, then the investigating consciousness arise. That is how the sequence is. First the consciousness, the adverting consciousness, because the mind was in a different state, it was taking a different kind of object, we call it the bhavanga chitta. Then when an object strikes at our mind, first the mind was directed towards the new object, then it experiences the object with any of the eye, ears, nose, tongue, body consciousnesses. Then it is received again by a different consciousness, we call the receiving consciousness. Then it is investigated by the santirana, the investigating consciousness. Then the process keeps on occurring. Now it goes further. Then upekkha sagata manodvara vajjana means the mind door adverting. Now if an object comes to our mind without the support of the 5 senses, without the support of 5 senses, at that time also, the mind, which was in a different state, has to get directed towards the newly arrived object. The mind, the thought, like object which came into our mind. So then the consciousness keeps on happening. The mind or consciousness. So then, to conclude the class, I'll just finish the 24 karma sobhana briefly. Then we have 24 karma sobhana chittas out of the 54 karma sobhana chittas. These cittas are 24 is divided into 8 maha kusala, 8 maha vipaka, 8 maha kriya. 8 kusala cittas are the cittas that arise when we do wholesome deeds like giving charity, observing the sila, doing meditation, preaching dhamma, listening to profound dhamma, and studying good doctrines, and sharing the merits with the diseased ones, and also observing, like rejoicing on the merits done by others. On such occasions, these wholesome cittas arises. And what we have to do is, we try to maintain our lives as much as possible in these wholesome cittas. And you can see there is two types of, like, if you look into all the eight, in the first phrase, somanasa sahagata, then there are four somanasa sahagata and four upekkha sahagata. If you go to page number two, the top lines, dosa mula, we have domanasa sahagata and domanasa sahagata. If you look into all the 89 cittas, you find the domanasa feeling, the unpleasant feeling can be only found cittas with hatred, cittas with anger. So therefore, if we have an unpleasant feeling towards someone, that is never a kusala citta. It can never be a kusala citta. So what happens if we can maintain our lives in the kusala cittas always, these depressions, anxieties, that would never occur in our lives. So what we have to do is, if we want to be happy according to the Buddhist perspective, maintain kusala cittas as much as possible, because there is no domanasa in this group. There is no domanasa in this group. So therefore, that is why the mindfulness is required, always to be alert not to have unpleasant feelings within ourselves. Right? Then mahavipaka cittas are the resultants of these cittas, especially when we are born in a good realm after death, any of these cittas would occur. And also in the kusala vipaka side that we already discussed, the rootlessness, some of the cittas are resultant of these cittas. Then mahakiriya cittas means the same acts that we do with a wholesome mindset, when someone does them after attaining arahanthood, those cittas are called mahakiriya cittas. They are very similar in terms of their structure. The difference is, kusala citta, eight kusala cittas can give results in future. The eight mahakiriya cittas that arise for arahants would not give any results in future. Vipaka cittas are the resultants of these kusala cittas. Right? These are in the wholesome side. So that is how the 54 cittas are divided: unwholesome, rootless, and the we should not call them wholesome. Eight are wholesome, eight are resultant. Resultant means the results of those wholesome acts. Then eight are functional. Functional means cittas of arahants. Cittas of arahants. Arahants also do the same things, that good things that we do. Right. So these are the 54 cittas. Next week I'll be concluding all the spiritual aspect. These are the spiritually highly developed cittas. These are the mundane, ordinary citta. So in the ordinary level, people have akusala, people have good thoughts, kusalas, and so forth. At the same time, these ahetuka cittas mostly represent the experiences that we have in with the five senses, and how the cittas that occurs during the process of experiencing the world. So this is the lecture that I would like to deliver today. I hope some of you got some idea about the 54 cittas, the kamacha cittas, and we normally get all these cittas. So I'll open the forum to have the Q&A session.
Yes, so for everyone else, if you have any questions, you can raise your hand or you can put the question in the chat box. Good morning, Pandit.
Good morning.
In the meantime, I have a question. So this question is kind of a philosophical question. So here, the lectures, the series, the lectures you are giving us, the name of the series is The Fundamentals of the Doctrines.
Yeah.
So what I'm understanding is that you're presenting to us the, like, individual building blocks of the teaching.
Yeah.
And then, so for example, like we say that for citta is like a fundamental or building block of the world. So, and then the other day, you also mentioned about the aramanarasa, and then also today, you also mentioned about that, the value or the properties of the object. So, So to my understanding, then when we say about the subjective appreciation, then we can equate that to concept. But what about the, you know, the taste of the object, or the inbuilt, the pleasantness and unpleasantness of the object? It sounds to me like it is another kind of fundamental. So does that mean that the fundamental has another fundamental? So the question is, how can we fit that into the picture of the thing?
Yeah, it's a very subtle, deep question. So as what Dr. Ryan is asking, now we mentioned about the arammana rasa, the taste of the object. We talked about a flavor of the object. Because I mentioned there is an inbuilt quality within the object, an inbuilt property within the object, which distinguishes it as pleasant or unpleasant. For instance, we take an object like citta. Now, citta takes an object, for instance. Citta focuses on an object. So this object, if we take this object as a rupa, right? Rupa. Rupa means matter. Or we call color, for instance. Right? The eye consciousness focuses on color. So color is one of the fundamental feature, fundamental realities of the object. And we cognizes another, like with one citta, we cognize another citta. Citta is one of the fundamental building blocks of this, of the Theravada tradition. So now there are 89 cittas, 52 chetasikas, and 18 rupas. So what I mentioned was, these 89 citta, chetasika, and rupa, specifically I was focusing on rupas today. So whatever the object is, they have an inbuilt quality called pleasantness and unpleasantness. Pleasantness and unpleasantness, either, whatever it is. We don't have both at one object, according to the tradition. So pleasant, and we also mentioned that it is something inbuilt within the object. Sometimes the subjective appreciation is there, that is obvious in the world. And also there is an objective pleasantness and unpleasantness. Objective means, regardless of our attitude towards the object itself possesses some kind of a value, some kind of a property. So now the question is, if they are the building blocks, ultimate realities, then what are they? So these are the ultimate realities. If the realities possess a pleasantness or unpleasantness, what are they? What are these? So these are the realities. And what is this pleasantness and unpleasantness? So are they another fundamental? Are they another reality? So that's it's a very subtle question. Because we tend to, we explain that these are the fundamentals. These are the realities. So our teaching is based on these realities. And those realities possess something, some other subtle quality, a property called pleasantness and unpleasantness. So how do we explain this? How do we explain this? So according to the Theravada tradition, I normally discuss this matter in when we come into the some other topics, like Arammana and so forth. So someone can think like there are two ways to consider this. There is an object. These are the realities. These realities are taken by a certain citta. Then the reality is, it doesn't have any pleasantness or unpleasantness. The reality itself is the reality. When it is considered by the citta, citta may take it, consider it as pleasant, the citta may consider it as unpleasant. Citta may consider it as pleasant, citta may consider it as unpleasant. That is one option. So there is no necessary of pleasantness or unpleasantness within the object. How the citta considers the object is which divides the object into pleasant object or unpleasant object. That is the first way of considering. The second way of considering is, there is an inbuilt quality within the object, and the mind is sensitive. The feeling, the Vedana feels that pleasantness and unpleasantness. On that occasion, the pleasantness, unpleasantness is objective. in the first occasion, the pleasantness and pleasantness is subjective, right? So these are the two ways of explanation. So then we go into the Buddha's explanation. Buddha's explanation. So then we find, like, this has been explained by all the commentators and the sub-commentators unanimously. So how do we find a way to understand it? That is what matters. Rather than saying that they have just mentioned it, it's better to understand how do we consider. Now, Buddha, what the Buddha has mentioned in few suttas, he has said that an arahant, a noble being, for example, arahant, can see a pleasant object as unpleasant. Not to feel as unpleasant, to see object as unpleasant. So this statement is what has made the tradition to come into such a explanation. A pleasant object can be seen as unpleasant. So a pleasant, beautiful human figure, arahant would consider it as a collection of repulsive body parts. So it is considered as an unpleasant object. Arahant sees a very beautiful figure, human figure. Instead of getting attached to that, he can observe it as a repulsive body parts, or just a bunch of elements, non-self elements. So in such occasion, he sees the object as unpleasant. The mind considers this as unpleasant. But the Buddha says it's originally a pleasant object. Originally a pleasant object. So what does this indicate? The pleasantness and unpleasantness was already in the object. And that, going against that true nature means the inbuilt quality, one can see it in a different way. So this statement, this first phrase indicates that the object has an inbuilt quality. Then there can be a counter argument for this. Isn't this classification, pleasant object means, if any object is attracted by most of the people, the object is categorized as pleasant and unpleasant, not the object itself has a pleasantness or unpleasantness. So there can be another counter argument for this. Now, according to what I say is, this statement indicates that the object has a pleasantness and unpleasantness within the object. So one can see other ways. Why one can see it in other way? Because it already had an original pleasantness or unpleasantness. Then the counter argument that we can raise is this clarification. Object originally pleasant or unpleasantness is not because the object possesses such quality within itself. It's because the social norms. If most of the people consider something as pleasant, then we consider it as something pleasant. And if most of the people consider something as unpleasant, then we consider it as unpleasant. So then again the question comes, why is an object mostly considered by people as pleasant, and why certain objects are mostly considered by something unpleasant? So for that, the commentators come into the explanation, because there is some kind of a nature within the object, some kind of a nature within the object, which makes most of the people to like it and most of the people to dislike it. So naturally, so what in the end what they comes is, there is something within the object which can be termed as itta bhava and anitta bhava. We call it in Pali itta bhava, pleasantness, and anitta bhava. Bhava, right? Then the question comes, okay, is this an ultimate reality? Is this a special, another ultimate reality? Is it different from the object or the reality? The explanations of the Theravadins is, this is itta bhava, anitta bhava is not the object itself. It is something related to the object. But it is a different reality, we don't consider it so. So in the end, according to the Theravada perspective, the reality is what is the ultimate building block. That reality has certain facets, certain properties, certain attributes, which are not considered as which is not considered as a separate reality, but which belongs to the reality. So then we have to refine the explanation about the reality. Define the explanation of the reality. Reality is a nature, but it has more other some natures connected to it, which cannot exist without the reality. Pleasantness, unpleasantness cannot appear alone. It cannot be found in the space. So it has to be all. It is always related with a something or a fundamental or a reality. So, but still, we don't consider it as a fundamental within the fundamental. We just consider it as one aspect of the one characteristic or property of the fundamental. So, property of the reality. So then, the definition changes. Definition comes is the realities of the Theravada tradition do possess such qualities. Like another quality is the Pachche Sati, for instance. Pachche Sati is we have few explanations on this. One is the ability of the cause, the reality to do something, the ability of the reality to produce a result. So we call it we separately call it as Pachche, the force of the Pachcheya. Then the Pachche Sati, according to the tradition, is not the Pachcheya. Pachcheya is not the Pachche Sati, but Pachche Sati is within the Pachcheya and it cannot be found apart from the Pachcheya. So it's something which is related to the Pachcheya, but not the Pachcheya. So likewise, the taste of the object is not the object, it is something related to the object, according to the Theravada.
Sorry. Thank you so much. Okay, please go ahead, Sijale Pumya.
Hello, Pandit.
Yes, Sally.
So you explain about the Akusara Tejas. So that moment you say some triple actions. So they were not indeed asked to the four abhayas.
Mm-hmm.
But how about those triple actions become like a habit? If we do again, so at the best moment, they have the chance to produce like a, we call a habitual gamma, right?
Yeah.
So that will lead us to the four abhaya.
This is another very important fundamental. So to get a rebirth in the woeful realm, to have a rebirth in the woeful realm, according to the tradition, according to the Theravada tradition, if I stick with the fundamentals and explain, according to the tradition, it should be one of the major kammas to give a result, to bring a rebirth in the woeful realm. Like, for instance, we getting attached to something that belongs to us, or we getting attached to our children, to parents, having love towards our partner. These kind of feelings are not going to produce a rebirth according to the Theravada tradition, even though it has been done habitually, even though it's a habitual act. These are very basic fundamental. Then when we say in this aspect, when we say karma, we refer to the acts of killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slandering, and so forth. We normally have 10 types of akusala kammas. So these are the kammas that only leads to a rebirth. Only these are the kammas that which leads to rebirth. Then what like attachment to our houses, our properties are not going to bring a rebirth. Then what happens? There are certain incidences mentioned in the Theravada tradition within the literature that one time there was a monk who received a very nice, attractive robe during the Buddha's time. Then he was really attached to this. Then suddenly that night, he died. That night he died with the attachment. Then the monk, because when a monk dies or passes away, the properties of the monks belongs to the Sangha. Then Sangha has to divide it according to the Vinaya rules and distribute among the to the suitable person. It becomes communal after we die. This monk suddenly died, so the monks were, Sangha was getting ready to distribute the robe among the community. Then the Buddha prevented this act. He said, don't do it for 7 days. He just held the act for 7 days. Later on, he said, why did I prevent it or stop this, held this act? Was because that monk was strongly attached to this robe. As a result, he was born as a bug in the robe. He was born as a bug. So then he was like observing, and he had some sense about what is going to happen, because he it was like suddenly he was born there. Then he was afraid that the robe would be distributed among the Sangha, the robe which belongs to him. So he, otherwise he would have accumulated a lot of dosa toward the Sangha and would be born in a lower realm than the animal realm. So then after 7 days, because he has practiced sila for many years, for long years, and he has kept the sila very nice, very, very strongly, he died within after 7 days, and he was born in the like blissful abodes in the Deva realm. So this shows that even getting attached to his own robes, like strong attachment to the robes, caused him to be born as a bug. Then one can ask the question, isn't this abhijja, the strong loba, which is mentioned in the tenfold akusala kammas? According to the Theravadians, abhijja is specifically the attachment towards the objects which belong to others, not towards the object that belongs to us. So, and that attachment also should be like, may this object become mine. Like seeing someone else's car, and we also starts to like that car and try to buy such a similar car, is not the abhijja. If we have a wish, may this car belongs to me, may this particular car belongs to me, that is called abhijja. That is a very strong akusala. It's a very bad, mean akusala. So attachment towards your own stuff is never called abhijja. But that monk was born as a bug because he had a strong attachment to the robe. So how do we explain? Because there is a very basic fundamental in the Theravada tradition that only the akusala kamma pathas, that are killing, stealing and tenfold kammas, can bring a rebirth. Not these trifle attachments, even though it's quite strong. Not these attachments and so forth. So how do we explain that? There is another aspect of the karma. This is something that we need to discuss in the lesson of kamma. So when the kamma, there is an aspect of kamma called upathambaka kamma, supportive kamma. The supportive kamma is fewfold. One aspect of supportive kamma is giving the opportunity. To other kammas. Giving the opportunity to other kammas. What does it mean? Now at the close of death, we normally know at the close of death. Now the mind stream is working. At the close of death, sometimes we tend to remember the things. Now a person may have an akusala kamma dominating at the moment, for instance. Dominate. Akusala kamma is dominating and he is supposed to go to the woeful realm. Now akusala is dominating. So what happens? Like a very good friend comes to the person and says him and reminds him, you have done lots of good deeds. So please remember them. Please rejoice on the deeds that you have done. So that person starts to recall the deeds that he has already done. So what happens? These chittas become kusala. These chittas become kusala. These recalling chittas are not going to give a result in the next life. These chittas gives the opportunity, facilitates the opportunity for a past kusala kamma to give the result. The opportunity was given because of these chittas. We call it payoga sampati. So likewise, when we have kusala thoughts within our mind, it gives the opportunity to pass kusalas to give results. When akusala is dominant, it gives opportunity to our past akusalas to give results. So likewise, when that, in that particular incident, how the Theravadins would explain is, that monk had a strong attachment towards his robe, and that was an unwholesome mental state. That, because it was very strong, not very subtle, that, as you said, is like a very strong kind of a attachment. Rather saying it's habitual, we call it like it was intensified one. That lobha facilitated one of the past akusalas to come forth and give the next rebirth. The rebirth was given because of in one of the 10 akusala kammas that he has done, maybe in this life or in a past life. Well, what the attachment did was, it facilitated. So in that sense, when someone is dying, if there is a very strong, high attachment towards someone or towards the people, towards the beloved ones, towards the property, and if he is unable to give it up, and the sorrow and lobha starts to dominate, this akusala can cause a past akusala to give the result, and this attachment, because of this attachment, the location of his birth would be decided. So most of the cases, people who die with the attachment towards their property are born among the properties, and they start to haunt and do various things. Maybe it can be animals within that property area of the property. So that the location was caused because of his attachment towards them, towards the person or towards the thing. But akusala kamma, the rebirth was given by akusala kamma. Because I explained this, not breaking the fundamentals of the Theravadians. According to them, a rebirth is given by any of these 10 unwholesome deeds. So that is how I would explain that.
So Fandi, this explanation also fits with the red rags. Because I remember there's one story, one Srinagatira, when he was taking the boat, he hit the grass or something at the death moment. He was falling apart.
Yeah, not Sri Lankan. Actually, this was this happened in long time before. He broke the leaf, right? That's the story, right? He was born in the Bhopal realm. Yes. Yeah, that this is how we explain it. Because that was not a kamma. That was not a kamma. Actually, it didn't cause him akusala, even not an offense. Because of his regret, past akusalas came forth and he was born in the Bhopal realm.
Okay, thank you, Pandit.
Yeah, so in that sense, if I say trifle loba, I'm not talking about normal type of attachment that we have to in our day-to-day lives and so forth. That is normal to any human being. We are talking about a very strong type of bondage, attachment. This can be quite dangerous. This can be quite dangerous. If a mother or father cannot give up the attachment to these children, the parents, children cannot give up the attachment to their parents, and also toward the spouse, and also especially to the property. If the mind is obsessed with such attachment, that can be a dangerous sign. It's not that attachment is going to give a rebirth. It can facilitate the past akusalas to give some woeful rebirth.
Thank you, Pandey Sam. Please go ahead, Mr. Ananda.
Thank you. Sorry, Nas Asrai. Actually, this is also related to the question asked by Dr. Ryan. So when you were talking about the objectivity and subjectivity and aesthetic value of the object, Bhante, now is it related to one realm? Like, you know, like for example, if you get a dead body, it might get attracted to a fox or someone who wants to eat that. But definitely, all humans don't like it. So how do you explain that? That's one question.
It's a very important question, and it's quite tough to explain actually. So I would give you the criteria given by the Theravada tradition. So whether this is applicable or whether this have any solid stand, that is something else. I would let you know that what is the criteria, as you ask, is it confined to a certain realm? That is a very good question. Like a dead body, like a rotten body, would always be an unpleasant object to most of the humans. I think almost all the humans would not like it. But except one who is really hungry or want to get some food and to survive. A fox would surely like it. The same thing with the excrement, the stools. People would surely dislike it. But the pigs or the dogs would still appreciate such thing. So how do we decide? Is it just now the pleasantness is confined to the human realm? So do we say pleasant object for the humans or unpleasant objects for the humans is pleasant for the pigs or something like that? I think that's the question, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So then the Theravadians, the decider, how do we decide ultimately whether object is pleasant or unpleasant? Whether pleasant or unpleasant? So the thing is, according to the Buddha, he has made like there is some kind of pleasantness or unpleasantness. Then how do we bring it to feel? So explanation is, take a society, human society. It's a human society. Two occasions. During a Buddhopada, a time of a Buddha, or an era, it's better to say the era,
era of a universal monarch. Right? These are the two eras. During these eras, epochs, there's a social hierarchy. Like various social levels. The highest will be the kings, then the ministers in the lower realm, the second level, then the merchant, the farmers, and so forth, and the lowest, like the slaves. So even the slaves, not the dasas, like in Buddha's time, like there were some untouchables, we call, like the lowest we call. Lowest clan or caste, right? It's not advocating the caste system. This is how the explanation is given. Like lowest caste, actually, it's better to say not the caste. It's the lowest. It's better to say the poor ones. Like normally, the lower caste is quite poor in those days. The poorest. It's better to say the word poorer because sometimes the caste doesn't matter in the hierarchy in some era. So kings and the poorest ones. So giving up these extreme classes, the middle class. This is the middle class. So now the criteria comes. So whatever in such eras, because according to the tradition, during these eras, the human mind, the human society is not fully corrupted. There is some kind of virtuous quality still remains in these two eras. So in such eras, maybe it's referring to where the Buddha lived. So in such eras, the middle class is the decider. If majority of the middle class would like a certain object, consider this as a pleasant object. If the majority of the middle class considers something as unpleasant, decide it as unpleasant. Why is that? Why do we exclude these two groups? The poorest of the poorest would, whatever the things that they would get, like something which is put in the dustbin or something which is even the trash would become very valuable to them because of their poorness. Because they are satisfied with whatever they get because they are unable to get anything. The kings, the highest class in such eras, would live like a divine-like life. So even the superior objects may sometimes appear to them as something very mean or something very low. They may not just because they have experienced higher pleasures in their lives. So therefore, the Theravadians would exclude these two groups and take the middle class and then the majority. Majority would, whatever object that is considered by the majority as superior or pleasant should be considered as pleasant, unpleasant as unpleasant. And this kind of a classification seems like very conventional. Even among some Western philosophers, I was taken by surprise because I myself was really not very happy about this classification, this way of classifying, because I myself can think various ways to debunk or think other ways about this criteria. Then I was taken by surprise, like sometimes even the objective thinkers have said if something is attractive or something is considered by the majority, It shows that there is some kind of a value in it. If personal liking or disliking can change, if we judge two people, that makes sense. But when we come into a majority of the people, then there is some kind of a value that appeals their liking or disliking, their opinion. Why the majority of people have the same kind of opinion, there is some kind of a value in it. So then the question comes, how about the animals? How about the animals? I think now the question is clear, because answer is clear. According to the Theravadians, they confine this is a human society and generalize it. And generalize it. For instance, the dead body, which is attractive to the foxes, would never be appreciated by the majority of the humans. Sometimes a dead body of a beloved one, because of the love or the craving, someone may start to like it because of his strong attachment. But the majority would not appreciate such an act. So therefore, taking the human society, they would generalize and say, this is how the pleasantness and unpleasantness is decided on of an object. So this is the opinion of the Theravadians. I myself was in most of the times I'm very reluctant to reluctant means do not explain this much, because I myself personally didn't like it much, but now I'm starting to appreciate it in one way or another. So this is how whether there can be a lot of questions regarding this, but this is how they present the pleasantness and unpleasantness of an object.
So basically we are talking about the subjectivity, right? Not the objectivity. My question
is... This is subjective. How to decide the objectivity. Based on this, you decide the objective quality. Like if something is attracted by a majority, it shows that the object has that thing has an objective value.
Oh, I see.
This is the approach. Like how to decide the objective value through the majority of the subjects.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I have another question, but maybe I can ask later if others don't have. Thank you.
Okay.
Sadhu. Thank you, Pante.
Yeah.
So, please go ahead, Dharma friend, Chu HT.
Good morning, Pante.
Good morning.
Just now, Pante told about the story about a man, Vikram, Bhaks, and then become a Deva. The story you told just now. Regarding this, is it just a pure story for education purpose, or was it a real story which was spoke by the Deva who came back to tell the story?
Which Deva story? I'm just a little bit... I forgot what I mean. Yeah.
I mean, yeah... The story that Vande spoke just now, say that they were attached to the rope and then become the bugs, and then after
monk,
that become the devas. Yes.
The monk attached.
So
to the
was
rope?
It just a story purely for education purpose, or was it a real history?
Within the tradition, we don't have such stories these were considered within the tradition as original stories. Now, this was, according to the commentary, this was said by the Buddha. Like within the tradition, we consider it as an original story. Whether it's authenticity, how to judge its authenticity is something else. But if I talk within the tradition, they would consider it as an original story.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Pante.
Thank you, Pante. Sadhu. And one more hand, Pante.
Okay.
So, please go ahead. Dharma friend, Technica.
Adhiransan, right? Yeah. When you do something, you feel the taste.
Mm-hmm.
Does it belong to unwholesome logamura chitta or ruthless vipaka chitta?
When we... can you put the question again? The first part I couldn't hear. When we...
When you chew something, we
chew,
feel the
okay.
taste.
Okay, chew something, we
does
feel
it
the taste.
Does it belong to unwholesome logamura chitta or ruthless vipaka chitta?
Thank you for your question. Now, when we chew something, so what happens? The mind occurs like there. Normally, this is how we write the mind chart. This is the Fido adverting. And then, Juha Vijnana, this is the tongue consciousness. Then we have Sampatichana, Santirana, receiving, investigating. Then there's a determining. And then we have a few types of chittas. Then this object is taken again by certain chittas. Now normally we choose something, if it is a pleasant thing, we normally get attached to it, right? According to the Theravada explanation, the attachment arises at this level. Attachment, then the following mind processes keeps on happening. Attachment arises here. So the experience of chewing, the experience of taste, not the chewing, sorry, I beg your pardon. Experience of taste happens at this moment. Experience of taste, experiencing the taste. This is the function of jiva vijnana. Attachment comes at a later stage. So this is a kusala vipaka or akusala vipaka ahetuka, rootless consciousness. So then sometimes we get attached. If the person says it, we get attachment. So this attachment happens at a later stage. This is the basic explanation. Then there's another way of saying, sometimes when we observe our experience of chewing, sometimes we say the entire process together with attachment or disliking can also be the experience of chewing. Experience of tasting, sorry. Tasting. So it depends on the occasion, how it was said. Now, sometimes we can recall the experience of taste mixed with some attachment. In such cases, we take the entire process. The process stops here. The process stops after few chittas. It stops. So the entire process can be taken as the experience of tasting. In some occasions, the only this consciousness. So if we take this approach, experiencing of taste is a rootless consciousness. And if it is a pleasant taste, we consider it as a wholesome resultant. If it is an unpleasant taste, we consider as a unwholesome result. And sometimes the experiencing of taste can happen together with some attachment or disliking. In that case, if our experience is so forth, we take it. Now, what we are saying is, now we have experience of taste. How we recall it? We recall it with another mind, another consciousness, with another process. So at that time, when we experience the taste with another consciousness, like we recall it, it can be this chitta or the entire process when we recall. If we just ignore this fact of recalling back, and if we just objectively ask, what is the experiencing of taste? This will be the answer. Experiencing of taste is the tongue consciousness itself. It's the tongue consciousness itself, which is a rootless consciousness. When we recall it, we have two ways of explaining. Sometimes our recall can be only focused on this moment. Sometimes our recalling can be focused on the entire process. So if you are asking from the recalling perspective, we have two types of objects based on the how we observe it. But without focusing on the observer, if you are just saying the experience of taste itself, we have to say it's just the rootless consciousness. Then this consciousness doesn't have any attachment. Attachment begins from here and then on the latter stages.
Okay, thank you, Pante. Sadhu. But I have another question, but I mean, it's up to you, Pante. So the question is about, related to the last lecture, actually, it's about Sanya.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that for Sanya, then it has two functions, right? The first function is to recognize what has been previously perceived, or to make a sign as the condition for perceiving again. Mm-hmm. It is the same thing. So kind of two functions.
Yeah.
So the question is, so for the function of recognizing what has been previously perceived, which means something has been to be stored in the past. So the question is, where is that stored? That is the first question. And for making a sign as the condition for perceiving again, then the question is, where is that sign is going to stay?
I think. Okay. So I think this question needs some explanation. This is literally talking about the memory, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So shall we take it to the next lecture? I think it needs some explanation.
Sure, sure.
Okay. Right. So hope you got some idea about the chittas and this on some points on this Dhamma discussion. So I wish you all the best and may this merit assist for the continuation and prolongation of the Buddha's teachings. Buddha sasanang chiran tittatu Buddha sasanang chirantitthatu. Buddha sasanang chirantitthatu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.